Today, we are joined by John Lafnidiar, a former Olympian, seven times ATP Tour double champion, and now the winning head coach of Team World at the inaugural World Tennis Continental Cup. The Don has spent his life turning can't-be-done moments into world-class performance. Well, hi, John. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Linda. Great to be on your show.
Well, before we get to what you're doing now, I want to go back to your earlier years. You know, if I remember you, you played at Wimbledon from a young age. You partnered none other than Martina Navratilova in mixed doubles. And you coached international player like Heather Watson. But you were also told as a child you may never walk properly. So how did this all happen?
Well, I'm very fortunate and blessed that I had the career that I had, because when I was born, my heart stopped and my mother's heart stopped as well. And to get my heart going, they injected me. And instead of injecting me in my thigh, they injected me in my butt, and they hit the main nerve going down my right leg and damaged it. So from birth, I've only had 10% use of my nerve in my right leg. Doctors said I'll only have a 12% chance of walking properly. My first 3 years I spent in a brace. And yes, like I said, my parents were told that I was never be able to do any sport. And, you know, growing up on a farm, luckily my parents didn't listen to the doctors. And I just grew up as a normal child. I had a serious disability. It was in 2000, you know, when I went to the Olympics, they did a test on me and I qualified to go to the Paralympics. So from a young age, you know, I was not allowed to walk barefoot until I was 18 years old. But, you know, growing up on a farm, my dad threw my shoes away and said, you know, just go. And I think the most important thing is that from my childhood is that my parents never brought me up as a child that had a disability. I was just brought me up as a normal child. So it really helped me. I always say, you know, the greatest gift that God gave me was a disability. And, you know, and that's for me, you know, really helped me so much. With everything that I do, you know, everything that I do is, you know, I love challenges. You know, when somebody tells me you can't do something, I get a smile on my face and I'm like, okay, I'm going to show you. So I always say my greatest gift that God gave me was a disability. And, you know, I love challenges. My whole life, you know, was a challenge until today. You know, my foot is a challenge. And, you know, when somebody tells me that I can't do something, you know, I get a smile to my face because that's the thing that drives me. And, you know, playing tennis, that's a moving sport. You know, everybody that I speak to say, how the hell are you able to play tennis? So, you know, growing up, I played singles and doubles. I got my big breakthrough at, you know, when I was 12, I won a tournament in Port Washington in the U.S. And on the trophy, it was a big wooden trophy with a crystal ball. And on that trophy was McEnroe, Jimmy Connors, Stefan Edberg's name. And it was the first time that I really thought, you know, maybe I must, you know, take the sport seriously, because I loved rugby and cricket. Rugby and cricket was my two favorite sports. Tennis was my third sport. I only did that during the holidays. You know, so then from the age of 14, I really became more serious of, you know, playing tennis and started playing internationally. And, you know, my first people know me as a doubles player, but my first big thing that I did was, you know, I qualified for Wimbledon at the age of 19 in singles. And then 6 months later at the Australian Open in the first round, you know, at 4-3 in the third set, I tore the ligaments in my right ankle and my back foot. And literally the doctor said I needed to stop. I said, you know, I'm going to continue playing. I'm not going to let my partner down. And eventually we made the semifinals, you know, hopping through the draw. Everybody that played against us thought they were going to beat us because I was hopping and, you know, focusing on me instead of focusing what they need to do. And then we made the semifinals with my partner, Marcus Andruska. I got my ranking up to top 70 in the world. And when I got home, you know, Dr. Fiferrero, that, you know, from the age from when I was born, that looked after me, said, listen, if you want to play singles and doubles, you will probably only play 4 years. So you've got to make a decision. So it was an easy decision for me. I was just privileged, you know, to be able to play tennis every day. And, you know, to play doubles was an easy decision for me. And that's where my doubles career really started. And, you know, the rest of my career, you know, I only played doubles.
Sue, I can't believe you did that from, you know, from somebody who was actually classified as being disabled, you know, that you managed to do that. So where does this come from, this resilience? Do you think it's being, you know, you said earlier, farm boy from Aramalua, where does this come from?
I think, you know, it's very important. I think that's for parents. It's very important. I work with a lot of parents and kids these days with my mental conditioning business, is that, you know, parents set an example. And I think my mom and my dad was a great example for me that, you know, nothing is too much. You know, if you want to do something, If you have a goal, you drive, there's going to be challenges. But at the end of the day, it's up to you. And from a mindset, and, you know, I can, from a young age, my dad, you know, as a farmer, got up every morning, you know, 5 o'clock, rain, summer, snow, cold, warm, he was up. My mother worked hard with him on the farm. And they were just a great example of, you know, how you do things. And that's why it's very important that you surround yourself with the right people. And I was very fortunate, you know, that I, you know, in my eyes, I had the best parents, two great sisters that supported me through my upbringing, and, you know, every holiday sitting next to the tennis tournaments. And then, you know, growing in Ermelo, you know, the amazing thing is they say it takes a village to bring up people. And I think that's, you know, there's a lot of us that comes from Ermelo that has been successful. And, you know, it was a village. All my friends' dad and moms were my parents. You know, you could never go tell your mom you're going to go to somebody's house and then not go to the house, because they will call to make sure that they, you know, can they send food? Can they do something? And, you know, growing up, we still got the 5-point plan if we were naughty. And I always said, you know, my friends' dads were probably the ones that gave me my biggest hidings when we were naughty. And so, yeah, it was a great group of people around us, you know, when we grew up. And, you know, I was very blessed and very thankful for us.
Well, I'd like to know about this World Tennis Continental Cup. And you led Team World, which won it, and it was launched in China. It sounds a bit like a tennis version of the Ryder Cup.
Yes, it does. So there's a lot of these competitions around the world. So I've been part of World Team Tennis as a player. That Billie Jean King started in the US for 22 years as a player and also as a coach. You know, and it's great, you know, tennis is an individual sport, but what these team events does is that, you know, bring men and women together playing, you know, in the same team. You know, the people, it's great for the people because they can see all formats. They can see men's singles, women's singles, men's and women's doubles, mixed doubles. So these, a lot of these competitions, you know, I do World Team Tennis. I did the World Tennis League. That was just before the Continental Cup in India. And what the Continental Cup was a little different is, you know, it has men and women playing, but it was Team Europe against Team World. And the exciting thing about this is that, you know, it's 3 days. Day one, every match counts 1 point. If you win a match, you get 1 point. On day two, every match counts 2 points. And then on day three, every match counts 3 points. So you can actually day one and day two, you can lose half your matches. And then if you win all your matches on day three, you still have a chance of winning. It's great because everybody keeps playing. You're in the competition. And, you know, China is, you know, they spend a lot of money in tennis. They want to do a lot of things. They're very, a lot of good, you know, female players. The men's players are starting to become much better. And, yeah, it was the first time that I was in China. It was great. We played in a 20,000 indoor facility. The crowds were good. And I really think that it's going to become, you know, a very big event. Decembers are the time when people play exhibitions and it's time for these team events. And, you know, I've been very fortunate, you know, somebody like Andrei Rublev, this is our third title that we've won together. We've won two World Team Tennis titles together where he's in the team and I'm the coach. And now this is the third time. And Elena Rybakina, you know, who just won the Masters for the WTA. This is our second team. So it's great, you know, because normally you find people, if not the same players in the teams. And, you know, with tennis, it's been good for me now, you know, for 3 years, I've had Andre in the team and Elena on the team. That's the interesting thing about the team competitions. It's not where you spend 4, 5, 6, or 3 months together. It's literally 1 or 2 weeks where you come, you know, you get people from different cultures, different countries that play in a team, and you've got to get them as a team to play and, you know, to leave their individualism to the side and, you know, and do what's best for the team.
You talked about these amazing players that you have at the moment, you know, in that world team of yours. And you've also, you know, been instrumental in bringing, you know, greats like Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal to South Africa. So what did working with these athletes of that caliber teach you about excellence at the very top of the sport?
You know, it's very interesting. I met Roger when he was 12 years old. I was 20. I was playing in Basel. And, you know, when you arrive at a tournament, you've got to go to the credential office to get your credential. And I walked in and the lady said, can you please put your name down? I wrote my name down, John Lafney de Jager. And she said, oh, yes, van Suid-Afrika. And I'm looked at, I'm like, Afrikaans. It's like, yeah, you know, I grew up in Kempton Park. I'm married to a guy here from Switzerland. We have a boy that's 12 years old. He loves his tennis. He's a ball boy. And, you know, that's how I met Lynette Federer for the first time. It is crazy because, you know, we became very good friends. And obviously a lot of years later, you know, she told me that she felt so bad because that night she went home and she told her husband that she met, you know, a South African, and she felt so bad because she probably sounded like a typical mother that thinks that her son is going to be the world, your next best player in the world. And I'm like, you know.
Well, she was right.
You didn't sound like it, but you were definitely right. He was the best. So, you know, that's where I started my relationship with the Federers and with Roger. My last 4 years on the tour was, you know, kind of like his first 4 years. And I knew that he would always come to South Africa. I was, you know, to play in an exhibition. You know, I was fortunate that when I was coaching in the world, in Indian Premier Tennis League, you know, I coached Dubai Rules, Roger played in my team. And, you know, that was the first time when I spoke to him and I said, listen, I know you're going to come to South Africa and I would like to, you know, do the event for you. And it literally took us 4 years. It took us 4 years to get a date and to get this thing going. And the amazing thing about the match in Africa was, you know, when I sat down with his agent, Tony Gottsick, I said, listen, you know, we're going to play in a stadium. We're going to break the world record for a tennis spectators at a tennis game, you know. And he said, well, I mean, will we sell out the crowd, you know, the stadium? I'm like, you know, you don't know South African people. And we ended up selling that out in 9.5 minutes. It was one of the, you know, it's still the record for the biggest tennis crowd, 51,954. It was amazing to see Roger and Rafa in South Africa. It was amazing to see South African people that wanted to, you know, watch them. And I've been very fortunate to be around Roger and Rafa and Novak and seeing the, you know, the reason why they're so good at what they do. You know, we talk about, you know, the only currency that can buy success is consistency and discipline. And even though these guys are playing in exhibition matches, they follow what they do every single day. They create great habits for themselves so that they can perform, because you pay them big money to play in exhibitions, and people who pay big money, those guys are, you know, they need to see that quality that we give when we play Grand Slams. It is obviously not always the same, but, you know, it was just amazing to see what they did. And what's interesting thing about the match in Africa, it was the first time that they played on a tennis court that had no backdrops. The ball boys were not on the courts. The ball boys were, there were stairs. Like after every point, the ball boys had to run on, give them a ball, run down. These poor kids, you know, the next day, they said they were so stiff running up and down. Obviously, the biggest crowd, it was the first time that, you know, the way they built the stadium, it was the first time that they did it in tennis. So there were so many firsts, and it was incredible. It was an incredible day, you know, and we're very, you know, blessed that we were able to, you know, have Roger and Rafa. But our company, No Boundaries, that hosted the event with Roger's, foundation and his agency, you know, Team 8, you know, we consistently looking to doing other events. So this year we're hosting 4 international challenges in South Africa. It's the first time in a long time that we've hosted international events. You know, we want to build that. We've started a new event called the Showdown. It's a team event. It's based on the cricket with owners, and we're getting the best South Africans, you know, to play. We're talking to the next big players in South Africa to do the next match in Africa. So there's constantly, you know, things going on, and I'm very privileged. You know, I still travel a lot, you know, around the world, you know, with the team tennis that I do, you know, consulting with players. And then, you know, one of the things that was driving me this year was, we have a nonprofit in Stellenbosch that, with the University of Stellenbosch, that have donated 9 acres of land to us to build a state of the art tennis facility for Africa. We do not have great facilities in Africa, and especially in the Western Cape, you know, with the weather, there's no indoor facility. So we are going to build 6 indoor courts with a stadium, so stadium courts, 7 hard courts. There's going to be 4 clay courts. There's going to be 10 pickleball, 6 paddle courts, and accommodation for 40 players. So the goal is to get the best players in Africa to come and train in South Africa, to host events there, to have a place, you know, where we get opportunities to the community for, you know, the kid that wants to get his first tennis ball to be able to be there. You know, the university will have a facility where, you know, they'll be able to play against international universities. The community, you know, coaches, they're going to train coaches that we can send out to cities and villages to start their own businesses. And at the end of the day, the dream is, you know, to bring the South African Open back, you know, and host it there, you know, in Stellenbosch. So, yeah, so... still traveling a lot, you know, with all these different things that I'm doing, but very fortunate and blessed that I, you know, after my playing career, you know, that I got straight into coaching, traveling, and obviously, you know, with the events business that we're doing, And now, you know, I've launched, you know, beyond the baseline that I'm very excited about, you know, that we're going to kick off in 2026.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. So you sort of, that is channeling your grit, resilience and teamwork you learned in tennis into a leadership brand and training people. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. So I was very fortunate. Like I said, you know, I played in a moving sport with a disability. Where they said, you know, I'll never be able to play sport, only 10% chance of walking properly. And everything that I learned, you know, through my leg, I had to work twice as hard every day just to be even with the people that I competed with. I was fortunate to see how the best players in the world operate on a daily basis. You know, I work with teams, I work with individual players, with corporates, and I always say I am not a sports psychologist. That's the last thing that I am. I'm not a qualified sports psychologist. But I was very fortunate that I played at the highest level. I coached at the highest levels, and I had a disability that taught me so many things. And I have access to the best sportsmen in the world where we learn. And that's one thing my dad told me at a very young age is that, you know, when you are surrounded by people that are high experience, you listen and you ask questions. But the most important thing that he told me was is don't just do it when you're around people that you think that are great. You need to listen and ask questions to anybody. Doesn't matter who they are, because you never know who's going to give you the input that's going to make that difference in your life. And one of the most important things that I tell people is that if when we drive in a car and you want to go somewhere, we have a pin location. We get straight to our destination. In life, it's exactly the same thing. If you don't know where you want to go, if you don't have a pin location, you're going to take turns and you're going to have the wrong turn off. You're going to have bumps in the road and it's going to take you time to get there. So as soon as you have your pin locations and you know what to do is in every single day, every minute of every day, you can make sure that you're going in the right direction to get there ASAP. It's a competitive world out there. Everybody is competing. If you know what you want, you will not get distracted and you will get there first. And when you get there first, you're going to eat the big steaks. You're going to have some nice wine and you're going to have the desserts.
Well, John, you are such an expert on tennis generally. We're South African tennis at the moment. So every now and then, you know, you see some players, you know, at Wimbledon. But where are we? What are the facilities like? You talked about bringing the Open back.
Yeah, so, you know, tennis, you know, we say we don't want to talk about the old days. But, you know, we have to refer back to the old days, you know, in our time when we played, there was a great structure with tennis. There was money to help players develop. There was tournaments in South Africa. We were in 1999, there was 32 South Africans that played at Wimbledon, men and women, single doubles, mixed doubles. Last in 2025 was only Lloyd Harris. He was the only player. So we don't have a lot of tournaments in South Africa. There's not a development structure for high performance at the moment. But one thing that has changed is that there is a lot of international junior events that they're hosting now. You know, there's more, you know, ITF future events that are being hosted. We're going to host the four challenges now for the next 3 years. So giving opportunities for the players to be able to play in South Africa that they don't have to travel. It's very expensive to travel and play. All these other countries have tournaments in their own country where they can play, earn money and earn points and get into the big events. So hopefully this structure that are slowly falling into place, you know, in South Africa will help. Is all our top players will go to US universities where they play. That is the pathway right now. If you're a good tennis player, you go to university in the US. You get a great scholarship. You can play for 4 years. You know, you have 8 or 10 players in your team that you can train with. You have physical trainers. You have strength conditioning trainers. You have coaches. And you play a lot of matches. So that's the pathway right now. The more events we get in South Africa, the easier it will become for our players to do well, earn points, and then get into tournaments, you know, overseas. So, you know, it's on an up. There's a lot of people in South Africa that's trying to do good things. You know, one thing where Tennis South Africa, you know, has to work better with all the academies, all the private academies are doing their own things. You know, I think we all have to start working together with Tennis South Africa if there's a pathway. You know, they've got to appoint the right people to be able to help us get to that pin location that I've been talking about, so where we can develop players. So definitely a lot of right things are happening. It will take time. You know, so hopefully, you know, in the next few years, you know, there's some players that are knocking on the door. That's college players that's playing at Evan Bardnall, Sokola Motsi, Isabella Kruger, that are close. They are close there. So hopefully, in the next year or so, they can all break through and start playing on the tour.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I think one of the big things that I would is that, with Beyond the Baseline, what we're trying to do is, work a lot of schools, not just, we are helping the kids, but I think it's very important, to help the parents. Because the parents are the ones, the last voice that a kid hears before he goes to bed is the voice of his, is the voice of his parents. So, I think it's important that coaches work with parents, explain to them what are the goals. It put pressure on the coaches because they've got to, they've got to step up. They can't, they can't BS parents, but also it helps parents to be more informed what's happening so they can work as a triangle with the player, the parent and the coach together. What we do with the On the Baseline with corporates, we help them because it is so, it's such a competitive, environment. And how can we help people? How can we help people to think differently? People want to have a, they want to break through and become one of the best companies in, say in the world or in South Africa. What's the mindset that you need to have that? One of the things that I always say in the corporate world that's very interesting working with them is, they go into a room, close the door, and if you haven't done your work, then somebody tells the person, listen, you haven't done your work. In sport and in teams, that gets done in front of everybody, not to shame and blame, but to make sure that everybody understands that I may be struggling with this. You may be very good at what I'm struggling with, so you can help me. But if everything happens behind closed doors, the team doesn't know what the other person is struggling with. So I see in the corporate world, the team, they say we're a team, this is our goal. But they don't really work as a team because they don't know the stuff that we struggle with. And we all think that vulnerability is weakness. Vulnerability is power. And especially for men out there, you've got to understand that we think that when we show vulnerability to our wives or girlfriends or women, it's weakness, it's power. And, especially with leaders, if leaders can show vulnerability and make people feel that, they're also scared. All of us are scared. I see what seems. If I tell them, listen, before a big match, I was scared. I didn't know if I was fit enough. I didn't know if I have all the skills. And they're like, oh, really? You're also scared? Because I'm very scared. I'm like, it's normal. But sometimes when we go out there and we want to pretend that everything is fine and everything is not fine. You have to relate to the player. You have to relate to the person that you work with. I'm very blessed and fortunate that I was able to play at the highest level and experience all those emotions, challenges, what it feels like to play at a center court of Wimbledon. What's it like to serve for the, for a Grand Slam? I mean, I served in mixed doubles to win the Australian Open and I lost my serve. And, the lessons that I learned from that, stuff that I will do differently. So I know what it feels like, but also learning from people that has been in the game for a long time. I think, from a sports perspective, that's where we go wrong. People that played at the highest level, the greatest players are not the greatest coaches. But if you played at that level and you can learn from somebody that's been in the system and bring them together and learn. So I could teach you what it's like to get to the top and you can teach me what it's like to teach the basics of the sport. That's where we start working together. And so I'm a big believer. You've got to share. You've got to talk. And when it comes to coaching, don't tell them what to do. You've got to ask questions because you first have to find out what do they know before you can help them get to the next level.
Fascinating. Well, nothing to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Linda. I appreciate it.